Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 119 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Bon dia from Lisbon, Portugal. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Welcome, Johnny. Man, it's good to get together for our Q1 updates. What a year it's been so far.
Dude, I think it's Q2. It's the middle of April already.
It's Q1, all right? We just finished Q1 in March. We've been a little slow and sluggish getting around to this episode, but for rightful reasons, we've been busy, boys.
Yeah, it's been fun. A lot of travel. Where are you now, actually, Sam?
I'm in a little island, a very exclusive island off Florida called Boca Grande. Have you ever heard of it, Johnny?
Ooh. You know what? Anything named Boca is usually pretty good. You have Boca Raton. But yeah, I've heard of these little islands. I've heard of like Hibiscus Island. I guess this Boca Grande one's another one. What are you doing there?
I'm here for a wedding, actually. So you might hear little quirks and hoots and hollers in the background. But my buddy from college is getting married. And it overlapped my birthday, which was yesterday, perfectly because all of our friends got together. We had incredible wine, filet mignon, and everything. And I didn't have to do anything. I just had to show up. It was great.
Wow, it's perfect. So happy birthday, Sam. We gave you a big shout out in the Boss Lounge for everyone who joined. But, dude, it's been fantastic knowing you all these years.
I appreciate it. I appreciate all the birthday wishes from everybody. And man, this podcast has been a big part of my 30s going so far. Hopefully we'll keep it going. But yeah, man, super pumped about what we've been able to do on the podcast, what we've been able to learn. And let's make another great year together.
Let's do it. So did you say that you are moving to Barcelona?
I'm moving to two different places in the next 2 months, so it's going to be busy, but yeah, I'm going to move to Barcelona. That's going to be my new home base, unless anything last minute crumbles with my visa application, which I'm hoping it doesn't. And then I think I'm going to take my Tampa place and move it up to Charlotte because it's just a better airport, a little bit cooler of an area, and I still want to maintain a home base in the U.S., but it's not going to be Tampa. See you, Tampa.
You know what? I don't want to say I told you so, but I'm sure everyone listening right now is going to think that because
how many months
have you been in this Tampa apartment actually?
I've been there maybe 3 months total, and I've moved twice because the first place was crap. But you know, it was more functional. Like Tampa wasn't the place I wanted to be in the world. It was, I have a business there, and then I wanted to be near my grandma kind of in her last year, which was successful in a sense. So now it's time to move on. See new places.
Well, I guess at least you'll have a place to store your furniture if you're moving up to Charlotte.
That's basically it, dude. A good airport, place to keep my stuff, and a closer drive to my parents when I get back to the U.S.
All right. Well, it's hilarious. But you know what? Glad you're making moves, enjoying yourself, and glad you're going to be in Europe this summer. I'm here in Portugal, and I'll stay in Europe all summer until September. So it's going to be fun to hang out.
Incredible. You know, not to get too far ahead, but this Trans-Siberia trip is coming along real nice. It was very hard to get people on board. Now in November, we got 4 people. We got a camera guy that's going to come and film it. So, Johnny, we'll reserve that seat for you, buddy. Number 5.
You know what? I would love to do it. I'm not going to do it this year, but I...
What? You're that committed to not doing it?
Yeah. I mean... It just doesn't fit my travel plans at all. I'm going to be in Mexico.
What's not fitting about it, dude? Dog sledding with me across Siberia in your train drinking vodka. That's all fitting.
It would be really fun. That does remind me of the time we took a train from, I think, Moldova to Ukraine or something. And you didn't bring any water. We had a bottle of vodka. You had no food, no water. And they didn't sell anything on the train. And I had like... one of those small bottles of water for myself, and that was it.
That was a great trip, man.
Which you drank half of, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
That was a great trip. I want to relive those days, man.
Yeah,
adventures continue.
I definitely did enjoy that. So I do hope that we do some kind of trip this year together. It probably won't be the Trans-Siberian, but we'll do something in Europe.
Sure, man. Well, dude, let's hear about money making Johnny. I want to hear what happened this last quarter.
So good news. So you know how I've been stressed about money for the last probably year. You know, I'm sure everyone on this episode, everybody who's been following the podcast is tired of hearing me stress about it while still traveling the world to do all this cool stuff. But I think when you go from anyone goes from, you know, earning money like a salary or making a lot from their business and then either selling that business or for whatever reason, that money no longer is coming in, it's stressful, you know, regardless of how much you still have in the bank or what future potential there is, it just kind of sucks. And that combined with the kind of market not being very hot towards the end of last year, it was really kind of flat, right? So I was stressed thinking, what am I doing with my life? Am I just kind of squandering it away? Never, you know, my goal of being a net worth millionaire is never going to happen. But somehow we are making progress, even without working as much and just traveling, you know, mostly, even while the markets are not crazy hot, they're doing okay. My net worth has crossed the $700,000 mark.
How'd you do that?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea.
What were you at the beginning of the year? I feel like it was under 650.
It was 651.
So did you find money
that I forgot
like
about?
You always seem to do.
Yeah, I might have actually.
I mean, but there's. I'm just thinking because I've been able to follow your progress, and I know what investments you're in. I just don't know what would have given you that much of a pop. I guess it could have been all of your, you know, like affiliate earnings and stuff.
No, there hasn't been that many. Like I've literally been making like $5,000 a month maximum for the last year. Yeah.
Well, you're doing a really good job at keeping costs under control. I think that's probably the biggest component of it as well.
Yeah, especially because I really felt like I was broke for this last year because I wasn't working that much and making that much, that I've been living ultra cheap. And, you know, the fact that I'm keeping my costs so low while the compound interest investments are doing its own magic and doing its thing. You know, I'm still earning money and still putting, you know, $3,000 a month away into new investments.
Yeah.
And it all kind of just adds up. It just compounds like crazy. I read an article just recently saying that the first 100,000 is the hardest to make, but then after that, as long as it's invested, instead of taking, you know, 7 years to get to that point, you start, you know, getting the next 100,000 every like 2, 3 years. And then once you hit 500,000, you start getting the next 100,000 like every year and a half, just because the compound interest is working for you.
And because you have the formula and the practice down, right? Like if you're growing like that, then you're kind of dedicated to that mission, and you probably are going to live within a common routine of saving, living frugally, and putting money aside to investments. And I've heard that same thing for a million. Like the first million's the hardest, and then once you've done that, you have the network, you have the experience, and you have the discipline to go out and make more money.
Yeah, definitely. So for everyone listening, you know, wherever you guys are at right now, just realize it gets so much easier, and then you can almost kind of just chill and just let it grow by itself.
Yeah, I could see you, like, I can't wait till you hit the $1 million mark on this podcast, but I could see at that point you starting to grow your money at a really significant clip. And it'll be interesting to see what you do then. If you really are like, oh, I want to shoot for the, you know, 5 million mark and kind of keep on doing what you're doing. If you're just like, I can just enjoy fire. That is financial independence, retire early, and kind of live off earnings. But I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I don't know if you have a plan for that yet.
Yeah, definitely no plan yet. I want to hit that number just so I can write my next book. I told myself I'm not going to write another book until I become a net worth millionaire. So it's going to be kind of, I don't know what it's going to be about, but it's, you know, whatever lessons were learned along the way. And that's like the one goal I have.
Cool. Well, that's awesome, man. So you had a great quarter, and you've been active. You've been traveling. You're in Europe now. You just got off the Nomad cruise. So that's very inspiring to, I know, a lot of people, including myself, that you're able to maintain such a lifestyle and also grow your wealth at not an insignificant amount last quarter.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, like, honestly, I'm very happy. I see people who have way more stuff, way more responsibilities. Sam Marks is a good example. You know, it'd be nice
Thanks
to have.
For reminding me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be nice, you know, to have a nice car, right? You know, have a nice Audi S6. It'd be nice to have a nice designer apartment with nice furniture, big TV. At the same time, I know that all that kind of adds to responsibility. All those are, you know, liabilities that you're accumulating, or not you, but like just people in general, right? Like things need to get replaced. Things need to get upgraded. We need a place to store it. And the fact that I'm traveling carry on only through Europe for this entire summer is so liberating.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good comparison too. Like I spent all of Q4 basically in Thailand all the way through January, and my expenses were about $4,000 to $5,000 a month. And I know people can do it a lot cheaper. And now I'm back in the States and my expenses are kind of like 10, 12 on up a month. So, but my happiness levels when I was in Thailand for those months was probably a lot higher. So it's kind of interesting comparison, like two very different lifestyles. One was just chilling in Thailand, like drinking coffee, working out of coffee shops, co-working spaces, very relaxed schedule, not a ton of responsibility. Now I'm back in Florida, like working insanely long days, working all through the weekends, have a lot of nice things here, a nice apartment, nice car, really nice, you know, go out, steak dinners, nice bottles of wine stuff. But yeah, it's interesting just comparing so many different types of lifestyles that you and I kind of come into and experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the happiest I've been in a long time was last couple of weeks. I was in Sri Lanka living in this little beach town and I was surfing all day. I had a $14 a night guest house that was half a block from the beach. My lunch would never cost me more than $3 or $4. Dinner is kind of the same, you know, maybe $5. And a surfboard rental was like $2.50 an hour, $2.50. Mm-hmm. And that's all I did. That's all I did for 3 weeks is I would walk to the beach, go surfing, and then have lunch, chill out, have dinner. And I was spending, including accommodation, probably like $20 a day, you know, $600 a month. That's, you know, went back to that old number. But I was like, when I was there, I was thinking, should I just retire? Should I just become a beach bum and surf all day and live off my passive income? No.
No.
Why not?
Because I think that, well, you could retire in a sense doing that, because I think what gives you also a sense of being and belonging and why you can do those things and feel okay is because you have these great channels to connect with people, and you're someone in the community that people look up to in terms of lifestyle, style, what you've been able to create. You have your blog, you have multiple podcasts, so you're still able to stay connected. But if you didn't have those things and you were just to fall off the map and go live in Sri Lanka and be a beach bum, I don't think you'd find nearly the same type of satisfaction. And I think that's the story for people listening, is like, just because you're doing it and are able to love it so much, you also, I think, have a much better network than people that might make money and then try to retire but not have the same ways to connect with people as you do.
Well, like, I was imagining, like, what if I don't even go online, right? I mean, so Sri Lanka is a different example, but let's say I can find a small place on Venice Beach, right, in California, and I can be a beach bum there. Like, would I have that bad of a life? Like, or no. That might be an amazing life, you know, like living in a small apartment, a studio apartment, a few blocks from the beach, walking with my surfboard every day and just hanging out there, you know, being offline, not even having any of that stuff, but really just, you know, chilling out and surfing and living that California bum lifestyle, beach bum lifestyle. Like, could that not make someone happy?
I certainly think it could. I think it could. Different, you know, pick your poison. I think that, like, what we have the opportunity to do and share with people is actually trying some of these lifestyles, you know, like dedicated, like go 6 months, Johnny, to Patagonia and be a tomato farmer and just cut off from the world, and then go to, you know, and then take 6 months and go to Sacramento and work at Trader Joe's, and like that's your thing, right? And then maybe go to Barcelona and rent a penthouse and like be a playboy. You know, you could try these different things and basically write a book about it, finding happiness.
That'd be a cool life. And you know what? And it's crazy. Cool. Like we literally just have this one life to live. And as we were both getting older, I realized, man, like it'd be a shame if we just went to a 9-to-5 job and we just did kind of the normal thing every day and we didn't try some of these things. And especially because we have the investments making money and growing on their own. As long as we don't spend more than that's making, we could, I mean, we basically have permission financially to just do this forever.
Absolutely. I, you know, you want to live with no regrets. And for me, that means try a lot of different things, like leave it all, you know, leave nothing on the table. Just go after everything that you kind of want to and have on your list. And my dad wrote me, like, in my birthday card a couple of days ago, he wrote, "My, where does the time fly?" you know? And it's so true. It's like, I'm 34 and I swear yesterday I was 26, like with no responsibilities, just like blindly trying to start a business and all smiles. And you turn around twice, I'm 34. And I think time moves exponentially fast. It's almost like investments compounding. Time moves at a quicker and quicker rate as you go through life. And it's important to, you know, to not waste time, no matter what you want to do, if it's making money or chasing dreams or traveling, you know, don't wait because you don't know what's going to come tomorrow. Had a couple, one friend pass away this last quarter, and a couple of, you know, I ended up going down to the Bahamas for my buddy's bachelor party that I wasn't going to go to. And he called me and he's like, man, I know your like schedule's tight, but one of my groomsmen just passed away. And it just reminded me like how delicate life is. And it really means something if you came. So I, of course, you know, made the trip. But it's like, it is true. Life's fragile. Got to get out there and conquer today.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, man, you know, that sucks to hear that, you know, that people pass away all the time and we don't really think about it because we imagine that we're going to all live until we're 100 and we're going to grow old and we're going to have all this time. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you know, it's not, there's no guarantee, right?
No guarantee, man. Not to sound morbid, but my friend's a doctor. He's at the wedding here. He works in Gainesville, Florida as a doctor. He's like, dude, every single night there's a young person like our age coming in dead, you know, traffic accident, drug overdose, normal looking college kids. It's like you don't realize the frequency that this stuff happens. So it's of course changed his outlook on life, as I'm sure it would anybody in his position.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I mean, I guess for now, it's more like a balance of part of us, you know, we really want to invest for the future and, you know, make sure that we are comfortable in our retirement or when we can't work anymore, or if we, mm-hmm. you know, we need something in the future. At the same time, it's a balance of also enjoying life now. So I think I'm very fortunate and very glad that I had put in all that work the last, you know, 5-6 years from 2013 to, you know, 17. And now I'm enjoying it and just kind of living off the fruits of it. I'm very curious, like what percentage of our listeners are, you know, or even just like, you know, way above us or above me at least in net worth and investments, and who's just starting out, you know. So I almost mm-hmm. imagine it's kind of 50-50 where exactly half are going to be, you know, net worth less than me, and they're trying to grow their investments and savings, and then probably a big portion of our listeners have way more than I do already.
Well, it's a perfect blend, I think, being able to reference where you're at and especially where you came from. Because when we started this podcast, you were at 250. So you've basically tripled your net wealth in the how long we've been doing the podcast? 2.5 years?
Yeah, something like that.
2.5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's incredible, man. You're going to get to a million. You're going to go from 250 to a million on this podcast, which is so many people's dreams, right? Or goals. I mean, maybe their goals are higher, but that's a very realistic path that you've taken. It hasn't been some, you know, crazy windfall that you received that was lucky or fortunate. It's like a very practical course to you know, achieving your dreams, really.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm happy to be able to share this with people. But also, I think the reason why I've been able to grow my net worth is just keeping track of it. But also, instead of buying stuff, I get excited to buy investments now. You know, this is what Robert Kiyosaki talks about, Rich Dad Poor Dad. Because whenever I see I have extra money in the bank, I used to think, oh, now I can buy the car I want, or I can buy the new MacBook, or I can buy the new XYZ. Mm-hmm. Now, when I have extra money, I'm like, oh, what new investment can I buy?
Well, let's talk about that. What new investments did you get into last quarter? Before we talk about performance of any individual assets, let's talk about anything new that you did, new initiative or new investments that you did last quarter.
So the only things that I put money in from last quarter is I actually just topped up things like my Wealthfront. I put more money in. I turned on auto invest as well, even mm-hmm. though, you know, it's not like my favorite platform in the world, because I don't really want to invest in bonds. You know, I don't really like the numbers that they show you on the dashboard on Wealthfront. It always looks like it's doing really well, and it's kind of hard to understand. But yeah. I figure at the same time, it's mostly investing in index funds, and it's kind of spread out of random stuff. None of it really bad. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna turn on a small auto invest, just $100 a month, which I won't even notice is gone, but I guarantee you know, if I just set it and forget it, it's going to end up adding up to a lot of money over the, you know, next 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm. So that was one investment. And then,
yeah,
well, you're also planning like some new things, right? Like you got Nomad Summit coming up and.
Yeah, so at the conference, I guess I invested in the non-refundable deposit for those rooms, but that's kind of business-wise. But as far as actual investments, I put more money last quarter into AHP servicing. So I had $15,000 in the fund, and then now I have $15,000 in the servicing. I also put another $10,000 in Realty Mogul, because I want to own apartments, but I don't want to buy one. So instead of just having, you know, sitting out of the market because it's too high, I've decided, you know what, I'm going to put a little bit more in. So we have that. We have, so HP and Realty Mogul, both kind of real estate funds. And the rest of it is I just kind of put money into Marcus, the savings account that pays 2.25%.
2.25. Boom. I love that, man. Monthly payouts. Don't really worry about it. If you get, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100,000 in there, it starts becoming, you know, decent little interest payments each month. And it's nice because I think through our lifetime, the last time we were ever receiving any type of interest from a bank was like when we were maybe 8 years old. I remember I had a Fidelity account and I was getting interest, but it seems like it was never there growing up and there was never like a huge incentive to save. So it's kind of cool to see that now.
Yeah, and it's cool that it's 100% liquid. You know, it's basically a checking account. So what I've done is I moved all my bill pay through there because I got screwed by Chase, which is, you know, is the best of the worst banks, right? It's better than B of A. It's better than Wells Fargo. But they still hit me with fees because I didn't have enough money in that checking account to cover my credit card payment. And normally that wouldn't have happened except for I had moved all my money into Marcus because I was excited about it. So now I've just, you know, transferred all my bill pay from my, you know, my PayPal account as well as my credit cards to taking money out of my Marcus account instead of my Chase account.
That's interesting. Yeah, I would definitely recommend Marcus. I mean, we talk about it a lot, but I use it as a kind of in between of my Wells Fargo and Bank of America accounts. So I put all my money in there and then I kind of zip money to my Wells Fargo for wiring or my Bank of America for checking as needed. But I just use the Marcus as a kind of the savings account.
I'm almost thinking, why do I even need the other accounts? Maybe I could technically just have all my money in Marcus and then Charles Schwab for the ATM card. And yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, I like it. So anything else on the new investment front for this quarter?
No, that's it. What have you done?
So every time I look back, I'm like, man, I didn't do much. And then I start looking through it all. I'm like, oh, yep, I did actually quite a bit. The biggest thing I did was I got another annuity policy through Stan the Annuity Man. And so I now have a full 20% of my total net wealth in annuity policies. And I did it because it's fixed rate, 4%. I've always liked these things. It's tax deferred and it's, you know, it's creditor protected. If that was ever an issue, doesn't hurt to have it. So yeah, I got another one of those. That was a pretty big investment and, you know, it's just something that I don't think about. I don't worry about. And at the end of the year, I get a statement that shows that I've got 4% more money in that policy. And then it also allows me to kind of be a little bit riskier on the other side, which would be my next investments I'll talk about. So a couple quarters ago, I invested in Patient, which is a startup, and I put another chunk of money into that, but not as an equity investment, basically a loan. So Patient as a startup goes out and lends people, employees money to cover medical costs. And so what we needed to do with that company was create a credit facility so that they have, you know, they have money that they can go out and loan. So I put money into that so that we could create this credit facility and get it working so that pretty soon down the road, we'll be able to go out and raise additional capital for this, a much larger pool of credit.
Oh, that was pretty smart, actually. I like that.
Yeah. It was fun to build it, actually. I didn't do a lot of tech work. Brian did, of course, but it was cool to see it get built and then have it in functioning where every single day money's coming back into this pool and money's being extended out as loans. So it's really cool to see the mechanism of it all working. And you can see how it would scale up to, $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. And that's been pretty neat to put together.
Yeah, because it's one of those things where, I mean, I remember from that episode, it was iLab 108, if you guys want to take a listen to it. But it was something like, use our money to pay your hospital bill instead of yours. Or use our credit card and not yours. So I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you got to actually have the money for them to use.
Right, exactly. We make them a virtual card, and then that money that I put into that loan account, they go out and they pay for their dental care or their hospital bill, and it's interest free to them, and we just payroll deduct it from their paycheck. And it's cool because it's like we're the bank, right? We don't make much money off these loans, if any, but just kind of setting it up from, you know, a business entrepreneur perspective was pretty fun. Company I invested in this quarter is a company called Explorist, Explorest. Johnny, this would be cool for you to check out. But basically, it's kind of like, think of a city like Hong Kong. So many interesting viewpoints. You know, you can go on rooftops, you can go in the middle of a street, you can be in sky bars, you can go up to the peak, you can go down to the harbor. And there's always the most unique, interesting place to take a photo of something. Or think of the Eiffel Tower. There is the best place to take a photo of the Eiffel Tower, even though there's maybe 10,000 places you could take that photo. So this app basically teams up with local photographers and goes out and just captures these incredible photos of any given place or city. And then you can subscribe to the app and unlock these locations. So someone that likes to be on Instagram or take cool photos, they can go find the exact location of these photos. Like, you might have to take, you know, elevator up and then cross into the roof and go up on the rooftop. It's really cool. So,
You know, that actually is pretty cool, because I think a lot of people, what they do now is just look at other Instagram photos or, you know, professional photos, and they try to backward analyze and figure out how they got that photo. And sometimes it just seems impossible. You're like, was this guy just like floating in the air or something?
Exactly. And there's so many, if you look at Instagram photos, killer shots, you look in the comments, there's always someone saying, where is that? How did you get there? There's millions of people that want to go just take awesome photos, including myself, right? So I think it's a really interesting model, and it's great how it showcases cities or destinations in really cool ways. I just did it in Singapore. There's maybe 25 locations in Singapore. So I flew down to Singapore in January, and I spent the whole day using the app, and it will guide you to all the places. And like, it basically unlocks like these really cool secret places in any city. And I really enjoyed it. So pulled the trigger on that.
Okay. I like it.
And they just launched in New York. So if anyone's in that area, check it out.
So like, so far the investments you've made this quarter, complete opposites. All right. So first you have the super safe side, the annuities, which for a lot of people listening, like, doesn't make sense for, you know, someone, you know, low net worth, doesn't have anything to protect. They're like, you know, why would I invest in something that only makes 4% when I have potential to make 10% or something else? But I think in your case, it makes lots of sense to have a pretty big portion. I mean, like, I almost wouldn't even blame you if you had half your money and it was like, okay, like, I'm not taking any moonshots. I'm not trying to grow it. I just want to play it safe. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's a fine investment for someone in your position. But on the other side, you have the exact opposite, where you have, you know, some of the riskiest investments of startups.
Yeah, it's like you said, I think if I wasn't doing this podcast, I might go all into annuities and municipal bonds to some degree, because I could live off that. I could probably still grow my wealth at a marginal clip. But, you know, I mean, it's just, you got to do something stimulating. I mean, I need to. So
yeah, if you guys want to, you know,
having a startup and investing in startups is definitely stimulating.
Yeah, I can see that being fun. If you guys want to hear more about what an annuity is and how it's structured, and kind of just listen to the episode we did on it. That was episode 4. Stan's brutally honest factual expertise about annuities. Stan the annuity man.
That was back in the day, dude.
I know. It's so crazy, right?
Remember recording that episode in Chiang Mai. It's one of the first ones.
Yeah.
Funny. And then just to sum it up, I also did 2 other private property investments. And these are in funds. So I think we may have touched on these last quarter. But it's basically like Fundrise just less visible. And there's literally hundreds, maybe thousands of these across North America, and probably anywhere from Australia, Europe, South America, you'll be able to find them. So they're more or less like Fundrise. They'll just target different types of commercial property. And I put a decent chunk into three different funds, which I'm happy to hopefully collect first quarter dividends this quarter. I think they should be released anytime soon. So yeah, you have the super safe annuities, you have the super risky startups, and then you have the, I guess, the kind of middle ground in these property funds. And we'll have on, actually, after this episode, Johnny, I have one of these funds, Apex One, that will be coming on to talk about, you know, their fund and the logistics of a private property fund. So that'll be a next episode. I'm excited to have them on.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, and the funny thing about these funds is I think a lot of us who have started investing, like once these online funds have been implemented, we don't even realize that these apartment funds or these like real estate investment funds have been around for hundreds of years. It's that normally you have to meet people, you have to go through tons of paperwork and contracts. And the biggest kind of roadblock was the paperwork, where if to sign you up, like it requires a lot of work and like wire transfers and like, you know, all these things where they would have huge minimums. I think for most of these funds, I've never heard of something less than, let's say, like $30,000. You know, a lot of times it's a $100,000 minimum investment. And it's mainly because they don't want to deal with all the paperwork and headache of dealing with a ton, like 100 or 1,000 investors, when they can just have a small pool. The benefit of these online real estate funds, like we use through, you know, Fundrise or Realty Mogul or, you know, any of these guys, is that everything is online and digital. So just a couple of clicks here and there. So they're like, oh yeah, if you just got $500, you got $1,000, you know, go ahead, you can sign up.
Yeah. I there's, you know, when we started the podcast, Johnny, I don't think we knew about how to access any of this stuff, right? And Fundrise was kind of like the first one. We're like, oh wow, this is kind of cool, let's give it a try. And that's expanded our minds and visions to what else is available. And these private property funds, I think, are super cool. So we had Omar Khan on, I forget which episode was. He runs Boardwalk, or was it I have to check the name on that. But he runs a fund, and they do them across the US. And that kind of opened my eyes to some of the other opportunities that you can get in once you know a couple people, or it's a world of investments. And that's why it's complicated. And hopefully this podcast has made the information a little bit more digestible.
Yeah, I hope so as well. And that was episode 105. It was called Cap Rates, and Omar is with Boardwalk Wealth.
Boardwalk Wealth, that's right. Yeah, good guy. Good guy to follow too. He puts out a lot of really good material. So if you guys want to check out his or sign up to his mailing list, he puts out really, really good analysis on things.
Yeah. So I'm very like happy that I'm able to diversify so much between so many funds and have, you know, $1,000 or a couple thousand bucks in each one. But at the same time, I guess it's all relative, right? Because to me, losing $1,000 is a lot of money. But to someone that has, 10 times a higher net worth, then, you know, then realistically, they should be putting 10,000 or, you know, into each investment as a minimum, or it's not even worth their time. So I think there's something kind of for everyone out there.
Yeah. And I think another thing, just, you know, how many investments you have, Johnny, you can imagine if your net wealth is 5X, you could easily get into another 30 investments, and then all of a sudden just keeping track of all those and annual filings and stuff becomes burdensome. So just monitor that as you go on and make sure you don't get in over your head. It's better to kind of like, I think it's sort of like, what's Buffett always say? He's like, have all of your eggs in a basket, but just know those eggs really well, versus like having mass diversification. But I think the direction you and I are most comfortable in is just diversify as much as you can and smartly.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm this is the first year that I believe I'm a bit over invested into random things, because the number of 1099 forms I received was annoying.
Like, it's mad.
Just trying to track them all down, even just downloading different forms from different sites, took like half a day. And I realized my accountant hates me. You know, they're going to start charging me more if I start submitting any more of these different forms. It's it's not worth it. If you have, for me now, if I have, if it's going to be a less than a $10,000 investment, I don't even want to make it because it's just not worth the time to have it in another form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially start mixing in K1s and it can get pretty nasty and complicated. And honestly, it's just way too much to have oversight on. So you have to put 100% trust in your CPA and 100% trust in these funds that the paperwork's right, because I'm not ever going to look over a 1099 or a K1.
Yeah, definitely not. So yeah, this tax season has been kind of a mess for me and not really that sure about the my accountant. He kind of dropped the ball last year. He didn't even file until July last year for me, even though I sent everything in March or April. You know, actually, maybe February, March last year. So we'll see how he does. But it was, I mean, part of it's my fault for just having too many things coming in, and mm-hmm. it's annoying.
Agree.
All right. So how did your investments do this year? I mean, this quarter.
Well, the market, everyone knows, was sideways and boring. I think it's really, really challenging for type A personalities to invest in the market. It's just, in a month or a quarter like this, especially my Wealthfront account, I swear that thing just goes sideways forever, you know? But as a whole, there was really not much anything to report on my investments outside of my start. My Angel stuff was great. Black Hops opened their second brewery down in Australia. They raised they're the only crowdfunded campaign in Australia to ever hit its maximum, 400,000. So that was awesome. Glint's down in Singapore just is finishing up raising a Series B. And so it's so funny, man. I invested at that company at $1 million valuation. And now the company valuation's 20 million and they raised a Series B. But it just goes to show, because my actual, what my, say, 50 grand has turned into is not that much. So you look at it on paper, you're like, I invested at a million, it's now 20 million. So my 50K should have turned into, 20X or close to a million. But my investment's 2X. And what you realize as an angel investor is, as you do more and more, is just by the time that new capital is needed and there's dilution from creating employee stock option pools, this, that, and the other, it's just really, really hard to do well, even in the case that a company grows 20, 50 times. It's just never as good as it looks on paper.
Yeah. But I could see that being exciting as well. So
it is.
I can see why you like doing it.
Yeah, it is. And, again, working with winners and people that just want to make a difference and are dedicated to the mission and trying to support them in any way, as people supported me in the past, it's great. It's kind of like paying it forward. I think it's a necessary investment necessary part of my portfolio going forward. And then other stuff, CN in Barcelona, they're in the middle of raising a round. It's so funny, man. It's raising a round should not be the goal, but when it happens, it just feels like it's a big accomplishment and a milestone. So with these early stage companies, it's really the main milestone that you can hit, because building a sustainable business off, their initial $500,000 seed round is probably not realistic, not in today's world anyways. There's a lot of fundraising activities the last quarter that's good for the angel portfolio. And then everything else pretty consistent. No dogs. Municipal bonds are performing pretty well. Annuities are clicking along. The market's kind of going sideways, but all the dividend funds that we're in have been great. So yeah, pretty good cash flow this last quarter, I'd say.
Yeah, I like it. And I guess that's a good thing. It's almost something that we shouldn't really look at. The only kind of funny thing is, so I'm looking through all my accounts. Because we had that dip in January, it does actually look like a lot of things are just worth more. So for example, my Charles Schwab account, I think it was really low because I have a lot of Facebook stock in there. I think I have 20K mm-hmm. in Facebook stock in there. And that went back up. So it was, basically it was high in July 2019 and then really bad January 2019. And now it's back up to what it was just last year. So it's not mm-hmm. that it necessarily made a ton of money. It just doesn't suck as it did last time.
Less sucky, yeah. For sure. Did you get money in the dip, or did you just have your standard monthly contribution, or did you put extra money in?
I may put in an extra $3,000 or something, but it wasn't a lot. And because here's the thing is, we're always so scared, right? I mean, it's now in hindsight, it'd be smart for us to put more money in. But I remember while it was going down, everybody was like, all right, well, this is the start. Where's the bottom going to be? It's going to keep going. It's going to keep going. It's going to keep going. Yeah. So it'd be stupid to put money in now. Yet now looking back, knowing that like there's lots of dips that don't become recessions, maybe every time there is a dip, we should be investing.
Yeah. Well, how much cash do you have right now? How much cash are you sitting on? Not number wise, but percentage wise of your portfolio.
I don't know the percentage, but the number is about 60 grand.
So 10%. Okay. So guess. I mean, yeah, we're fairly well invested. I think I'm about the same. So we don't have like a ton of cash on the sidelines to invest, because that's kind of also like your rainy day emergency money, which is the same. I have like 10% set aside as well for that.
Yeah, so I'm not too worried, but it would have been nice to kind of jump in, right? So other than that, my wealth fund. So my Vanguard account is actually doing pretty well. It was, you know, kind of that slow dip, but just growing. But it's also kind of hard to tell because I'm putting 3 grand in it every month. So it always is going to grow no matter what. It's going to grow by 10 grand every quarter. Every time we speak, it's going to be up 10 grand. Mm-hmm. But the market's been doing okay. So that was all right. The one thing that actually I'm logged into now because it almost looks too good is my Wealthfront account for some reason is doing really well.
You're going to have to give us some analysis on that, because ever since they made that change, I feel like the performance has been sucky.
So I'm looking to my SEP IRA account in Wealthfront, and it looks like year to date, so just for 2019, my U.S. stocks is up 16%, foreign stocks up 12%, emerging markets up 14%, dividend stocks up 13%, real estate up 18%. Corporate bonds up six. Emerging markets up six.
But is that saying from the beginning of the year? Because we were in a dip at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So this is the problem with the Wealthfront, is they always make it look like everything's doing amazing.
It's so green, man. It's so green.
Everything's
in there.
Always green. But you know what? At the end of the day, my numbers, my total bank balance in my Wealthfront is going up. So whatever it is,
yeah,
I'm okay with
that's
it.
That's what matters, right?
Yeah, but aside from that, everything looks pretty steady. My cryptocurrencies don't suck as bad as they did in January, but I'm still down like 10 or 15 grand. I think the biggest kind of lesson learned from that was I shouldn't have gotten FOMO and invested. Even though I was smart and I was like, I'm going to cap this at 5%, it was still a waste of money, you know, investing up to 5% unless I had a real plan. And the plan should have been, you know, write down a number and say, okay, once it doubles in worth, I'm going to sell half. Once it doubles in worth again, I'm going to sell half. And that way I would have, if I had actually followed that, even though I had said I was going to do it, if I had actually followed through, I would have been up. But, you know, just FOMO. I think most of us, that was a difficult one, man.
Yeah. That was a very difficult one. It's not over yet. So, you know, it's funny because when we ever recorded these crypto episodes in the past, it was like we'd record it and then we were not able to publish it until about 4 days later when we can polish up the episode. And then we're always like, man, by the time we polish this and publish it, it's going to be wrong. Like the market was changing so quick that whatever you put out there, it was already outdated information, you know? It's wild.
Well, I still meet people all the time who are still involved in crypto. People just don't talk about it as much anymore because it's not, you know, like most people don't want to hear it because a lot of people lost money from it. But I have a feeling that it's going to make some kind of comeback, maybe not the same wild investing, but I think, you know, give it a couple of years, there's going to be some other kind of rendition of cryptocurrency again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Andreessen Horowitz is still going heavy into it. He's like, I'll invest in any market, up, down, no matter what, I'm going to keep investing in it. So that's a pretty good nod of confidence right there.
No, no, no. Or craziness. We'll see.
Craziness. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yo, so I have a funny update. Not funny for me, but I guess good lesson for the listeners. A good story to reference.
Okay.
So one of my one of my new properties in Phuket that I bought like 2 years ago, pre-construction. It's I have one that's finished that's been doing pretty well, but this one's been delayed, no communication from the developer. So it all started to smell really sour. And I had a friend that was down in Phuket go look at the property. They're like, yeah, they haven't even broke ground. And the thing was supposed to be done at the end of 2018. They've like just put down a little bit of cement and cleared some land. But finally, I got an attorney and I'm like trying to figure out what's going on. And long negotiation, I'm basically like, look, like, just give me my, you know, I put down like 50% over the last few years. I'm like, just give me that back. We'll, you know, wipe our hands, call it a day. So they agreed verbally. And now it's been like another 4 or 5 months of just going back and forth. And like, they're just dragging their feet, right? They're just playing games. So finally I told the attorney, I'm like, look, this is just wasting everyone's time. It's eating up a bunch of cash to do it, to like deal with them. So I'm like, let's just tell them that we're take it to court. So she tells them we're just going to make it, you know, a court matter. And then I'm down in Tampa and I'm having dinner with this guy who went through a very, very similar situation. He's like, yeah. So I took it to court, basically sued him, and I fly over to Phuket. And as I get off the plane, the police nab me, throw me in jail for defamation of character. And he's like, what is this all about? Turns out like, someone got wind of that lawsuit, and you know how shit is in Thailand, right? So the developer is just in bed with the police and they throw him in jail. He spends 22 days and nights with no bed in Chulalongkorn's prison, basically, in Phuket. He's in there with like 10 other guys. There's no bed. He's sleeping on the floor 22 days, 22 nights. So he's like, dude, don't take it to court. He's like, try to get it done amicably, just, you know, but don't take it to court because you might get off that plane and they might get you. You know, like, you don't have control over it, and you know how stuff is run over there. So, yeah, that sucks on both sides, right? But could have sucked a lot more. I'm not doing 22 nights in Phuket.
Yeah.
Prison.
That sucks, man. But, you know, honestly, this is a good reminder to everyone else is, like, we see as tourists, like, one side of Thailand. I love Thailand, but I would never do business there. I'll never invest there. I'll never open a business there. Like, I've heard so many firsthand stories like this. I was literally at Tiger Muay Thai Chiang Mai on their pre-opening party, and it was beautiful. Mm. They had built like a 50-room hotel with a restaurant on site. I think it had something like 6 or 8 boxing rings, a jiu-jitsu room. It was beautiful. All brand new equipment. We had a nice party just for the, you know, kind of like the personnel and the people involved. And then a few days later, the general manager, he like messaged me on Facebook saying, hey, it's over. One of the Thai partners screwed him and just said, nope, you know, thanks for building this. Get off my property. And there was nothing they can do about it.
Dude, I heard that story as well. Was that the Chiang Mai one, or was that some other location?
That was the Chiang Mai one.
So bad, man. Just, you know, it kind of just turns your heart black in the business world. But look, there's always risks involved with everything. But when you're operating over there and you're not a citizen, it's not a level playing field. So you got to be careful. I will say though that 4 of my 5 properties over there, I'm very happy with. But I think that was in part luck, because I also didn't know what I'm doing and I rushed everything. I think more cases than not, if you do it that way, it's not going to turn out well. And that's basically what's happening on this 5th property, because I didn't really even have an attorney look at the contract, man. I was just like down there impressed with the sales office. Everything looked legit, and I had done properties before and it came out well. So I'm like, screw it. You know, it's going through an agent. Give it a go. But, you know, you live and you learn. I'll keep everyone posted on how it turns out.
Yeah, well, thanks for living it and learning for us so we don't have to make those mistakes.
Yeah, not only do you get the free lesson, Johnny, but you also get to stay in the place for free too. Win-win.
All right. Well, you mean the one that is a slab of concrete right now?
Yeah, right. You can sleep under the banana tree.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Man, well, it's been a good quarter, dude. I think next quarter is going to be great. I'm looking forward to getting over to Europe this summer, I'm definitely moving to Barcelona. I'm planning on opening an office for coworker.com. Not like a huge formal office, just, you know, maybe like a 4-person office in a co-working space. But yeah.
Okay.
Onward to new chapters, buddy.
All right. So that's good. Okay. So it's going to be right now, end of April. When are you going to be in Europe?
Going to be in Europe end of May. And that plan is to basically be in Barcelona. Yeah, be in Barcelona as the base. And I'd really like to get up to the Baltics maybe in August, which is the hottest month, probably the nicest month up there, and do maybe a month of just kind of easy breezy, calm traveling through maybe Latvia, Lithuania, and Belarus.
Okay, I might meet you up in Belarus. I'll be in Ukraine starting next week, and the plan is to stay in Kharkiv, the second biggest city in Ukraine, for 3 months and learn Russian. I'm going to take some classes.
Wow.
I'm going to join a gym. I'm just going to have a normal life. Don't bother me. Let me speak my Ruski.
Dude, congrats. What an ambitious goal, learning Russian. Yeah. You'll be able to really draw in your Genghis Khan roots after, you know, with your look and speaking Russian.
Dude, it'll be cool. And it's going to open up some doors to be able to travel to, like, you know, Kazakhstan and all the places where there's the Asian speaking Russian dude, so I can just blend in.
It'd be great. Well, listen, you put the plans together. I'll go on your schedule. I did last year. It was too fast, too much running around Spain and Portugal. You just let me know what you want to do in Belarus and what speed you want to go, and I'll be there.
Well, unfortunately, as Americans, we only get 5 days in Belarus.
Perfect. Back to the speed travel.
So there you go. But my birthday is July 11th, so I would hope that you'll come out to wherever I am, or we can meet up somewhere during that time to hang up in Europe.
Sounds good, man. The only conflicting date that I have is, and I'm sure you're invited to come, we're doing Running of the Bulls, Kevin Shea and I, and Kevin rented a apartment right over where the actual running is. Very, very hard accommodation to get any time, even if you book like a year in advance. But he was able to get one of those, so we're going to be going there for the Running of the Bulls, and we're going to be running again.
When is that?
I got to check the dates. I think it's in July, but I don't know the exact dates.
Let me check right now. And that's in Madrid, I'm assuming, right? Or is that? No, Paloma.
No, it's in Pamplona.
Papaloma.
Yeah, you know, that's funny. We'll either drive from Barcelona, or we'll maybe go through Madrid or something by train. That might actually be a good time to have a little meetup. If Kevin's in town and you end up coming, we can do like a Pamplona Invest Like a Boss meetup, and then go a run from some bulls.
That's actually the exact week of my birthday. It looks like it's from July 7th through the 14th.
Yep.
So, dude, I have no idea where Pamplona is, but Kevin, if you're listening and you have a spot for me in that apartment,
there he is.
Maybe just a couch, maybe a Thai prison cell floor for 22 days. Anything better than a Thai prison cell floor? Yeah, maybe I'll come out.
Dude, great. North of Spain, Basque country is incredible. You'll love it. Have you been up there, Johnny?
No, I have not.
Oh, dude.
So that might be cool.
San Sebastian. You would love San Sebastian.
You know what we can do as well? We can do a bit of the Camino de Santiago from there, the little walk.
I would be down. Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah. So let's figure this out.
Seems like it would be very hot, though.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, let's plan on that. Maybe I'll fly out from – oh, God. This is exactly what happened last year, and I regretted all that travel.
We'll fly to Barcelona. We'll drive to Madrid. Oh, we'll take a train up to Pamplona. Go to San Sebastian. It all sounds good. No, man, we'll keep it slow. Maybe a train ride, and
we'll do something.
We can always get a base and then – explore from there if we feel like it, but I'm definitely in the slow motion groove right now.
Despacito, I think that's what it was.
Despacito.
All right.
Puerto Rico. Mama Chico.
And with that, thanks for listening, everyone. It's been really, really fun. Big thanks to everyone who's been listening and following along. It's been an amazing journey, and I think this quarter is a great reminder that even though it's important to invest our money well and buy assets instead of liabilities, and you know make sure we're making money from our money, it's also important to use that time and money to be able to enjoy our lives. So it's been fun having this journey with you, Sam.
Likewise, Johnny. And for all the guests out there, if this is the first episode that you've heard on Invest Like a Boss, check out some of our last quarter episodes. We had on Bob Sapp, big K1 fighter. We had on Danny Moses from The Big Short. We did an episode on estate planning, and also we talked about opportunity zones. And Johnny, high five, dude. We got written up by The Balance as a top 8 investing podcast for 2019.
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, they're a big source for financial news. So shout out to The Balance. Thanks for having us on there. And shout out to everyone who's been leaving us these 5-star reviews of the show on iTunes. This week, I want to give a recognition shout out to L Chapman 89. He says, most valuable free podcast ever. 5 stars. This has been by far the most helpful collection of investing knowledge and strategies out there. I've listened to quite a few of these episodes and I'm blown away by the amount of diversity they provide. One of the most memorable sayings I heard was, even if you don't need to know the information at this moment, it's still good to learn and know about now. The last thing that you want to be is ignorant while investing in anything. So keep up the work. Good work, Sam and Johnny. I wish you success in all your future endeavors and look forward to what's to come. Thanks, El Chapman.
Nice one. Yeah, that's great. Great to hear.
Yeah. So we really appreciate the reviews and for you sharing this podcast with your friends. Take a screenshot, share it on your Instagram, your, you know, Facebook, just email it to a friend. Just tell someone to subscribe to Invest Like a Boss. So it'll help. And go to iTunes and leave us a review because that helps other people find it.
Thanks, guys. Johnny, it's been great to recap the quarter with you and can't wait for next quarter. Hope all the bosses out there have excellent performance this year and get out there and live life. It's fragile and it's beautiful.
Living la vida loco, baby. All right. See you guys. Hasta luego. Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.